Hello and welcome to episode 17.5 of the Nashy Cast. This time out we've got a little bit of an odd thing to bring to you, but preliminaries out of the way. I'm Rod Barnett.
I'm Troy Gwynn.
And this episode
brings
us...
That's the always odd part that we bring to you.
That's always the odd part. Yeah, that is the always odd part.
But we got a special bit of oddness here that we think you'll enjoy very much.
Yes, we managed to get an interview with Caroline Monroe, the co-star with Paul Nashy of Howl of the Devil. We spoke with her briefly at two separate intervals, which you'll hear in the interview, at Wonderfest. It's in Louisville, Kentucky. Did I say Louisville correctly? Did I miss that one?
It's Louisville.
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 I can never. Yeah, a Louisville native would probably, you know, sneer at me for mispronouncing the name so atrociously. Even though, good God, man, I'm from Tennessee.
That's right.
Doesn't matter. We got to talk to Miss Monroe, the very gracious and sweet and kind Miss Monroe.
Wonderful,
I'd met her before. Had you met her before?
I sure had. Actually, at a Wonderfest years ago, and then. Again, I believe at one of the Monster Bash conventions, but she's just you cannot ask really for a celebrity guest to be any nicer than she is.
True.
I mean, she's
very
just
true.
A very genuine, very warm person, just terrific,
and very open to questions at all time. My only complaint, and you will hear it, unfortunately, in the audio quality of this interview, is that we conducted this interview kind of out in the open, around where there can be lots of other people as well. And unfortunately, the background noise does get overwhelming a couple of times. My apologies for the somewhat diminished sound quality of certain sections of the interview. That's just the roar of the crowd in the background,
right.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, it was a busy, busy room that we were interviewing her in. So,
but she couldn't have been nicer. She answered every question I put to her, and Actually, as I questioned her, not just about Howl the Devil, but about the film she made just a year or two afterwards, her second teaming with the glorious Luigi Cozzi.
Right.
She made
the esteemed Luigi Cozzi.
The esteemed Luigi Cozzi, or Lewis Coates.
Lewis Coates.
She had made Star Crash with him years before, and in 1989 she made a film called The Black Cat, or Di Profundis, or it's known under a dozen different titles. And she's just mind-bendingly gorgeous in it, but it was Luigi Cozzi's kind of almost third chapter in the Third Mother's Three Mothers trilogy that was started by Argento with Suspiria, followed up by Inferno, and then, of course, Argento didn't do anything else with it until just a few years ago when he made The Third Mother.
Yeah.
So... this was the kind of unofficial Luigi Cozzi third film version of it, and Suspiria gets referenced in it, as well as the Necronomicon and a few other things. But I asked her a few questions about that as well, and she had a startling bit of information to recount about that film as well. But this is a brief bit of interview with Caroline.
Yeah, and also I just want to urge anyone who has not listened to, I think it was the second .5 we ever did, which was our interview with Paul Nashy's son, Sergio.
I don't know, that was part of the Howl the Devil episode.
No, that's right, it was just a shorter episode because
We didn't want to spoil it too
right.
much.
Right, so yes, our episode of Howl the Devil that had the interview with Sergio Molina, Paul Nashy's son, who obviously was in the same film we'll discuss here with Carolyn Monroe, so if you haven't had a chance to listen to that, you definitely want to go back and check that out as a part of this ongoing interviewing process. I'm not sure if there's anybody else we can find from that film, but hey, you know, it's
well, unfortunately, Howard Vernon has
passed
Vernon's
away. Gone, and yeah,
so is Paul.
So
and
is Paul. Yeah.
So, yeah, no, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
There are the possibilities, though. At any rate, she couldn't have been nicer, she couldn't have been sweeter,
yes,
and she couldn't
you.
Be...
Thank you, Carolyn, very much.
Very, 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 very wonderful lady, and actually quite fun to talk to, even the moments that aren't captured on mic were quite fun and amusing. But here you go. Check out the interview. It's in two sections. I think and I hope you will probably enjoy it.
You filmed Howl the Devil in 1987.
I did.
And at least that's what all the records say. And I believe that's what Paul says in his own his autobiography. And had you seen any of his films? Did you know anything about his filmmaking process? Did you know anything about him before the project came to you?
I knew about the man, and to be honest, I hadn't seen any of his films.
Okay.
But I knew... I'd read up a bit about him, so I knew he was a bit of an icon, a Spanish icon. So I knew somewhat about him, but I hadn't seen any of his work, I hate to say.
Oh, well, that's believe me, understandable considering the standing of his work. I mean, he got very little respect in the 70s, even as he was making film after film after film and making lots of money. But,
what an amazing man he was. He was a man of a very, very modest man. Very, very modest. Very passionate about his work. Totally passionate. I suppose very Latin, you would say. But he had a very strong sense of family. He had his wife there and Sergio, his son, when we were making Howl of the Devil. So it became such a family. I felt so much a part of the family. It was a small team, a small crew, Spanish crew, and we had the wonderful Howard Vernon.
Yes.
Who I used to sit. Somebody suggested. We stayed in this very beautiful palatial. I think it was a monastery or had been a monastery or something. Howard and I stayed there. They put us up in this wonderful place. So we used to sit and have dinner, just myself and Howard, every night after shooting. And it was what a thrill to sit and hear some of his stories. And we got on so well.
I mean, it's a man who worked
with everybody.
Yeah, he worked with Fritz Lang.
He worked with everybody.
You think about that. And
I know.
The thing is, we talked last year. We talked via Skype. We talked with Sergio.
Yes.
About
you did.
Oh yeah, sweet man, lovely guy.
Oh, I adore him. Well, he was my little baby.
That's what was so kind of funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He said the two of you really got along like
we
a house.
Really
wonderfully.
Did. He was 10 or 12 or something. Young.
It's so funny. So many of his memories of making it were wrapped around. Horseback riding, because he got to do that all the time because of where they filmed it.
Yeah.
You guys filmed it out at that country estate that was essentially the family estate,
right,
where they had made three or four other films.
Lots
they made three
of
or four,
his other stuff
yeah.
was made there.
And they would just redress it or shoot it in a different
That's
way,
right.
And it would be the exact same stuff,
yeah,
but you might not even recognize
no.
it. Now, it's been my understanding, and you've said this before in other interviews. Now, I know, Nashie, he didn't really speak a lot of English.
Not a terrific amount.
You spoke a little Spanish, but
yes,
not a
I did.
Lot.
I could understand it.
Really?
Rather than speak it. So I could understand what he was saying, but I couldn't speak back in English. So
was there much in the way of a communications problem?
Yeah. No, I didn't find so, and I don't think he did. We would communicate, him speaking Spanish and me speaking English,
right.
So it worked. It somehow worked.
Now, I understand that Howard Vernon spoke several languages.
Yes.
So that was probably not any trouble at all.
No problem for him. No. No problem.
Were you presented with a script beforehand? I mean, what did you see before you went in to go and start filming? Did you have a complete script?
I was sent a script in England, and I read it, and I thought it looked a really interesting script. I couldn't see how it was going to be done. I couldn't really envisage all the different characters. I couldn't, because I hadn't seen much of Paul's work. I couldn't imagine how that would take
all the various ways. How they would
Absolutely. How that, you know, how they would go from this to the other character back again. So
the way they play out. Did you ever get to see them?
I saw some of the film, and that's when I saw some of the film when I went to Estepona. I was invited, that's in Spain. They had took part on the jury in southern Spain, and they showed the film. They showed Alaido del Diablo. They showed the film.
I'm glad you can pronounce it, because I know I can't.
Alaido del Diablo. Yes, they showed the film.
Well, the thing is, there seems to be no English version of it available at all. It's never been released on video
subtitled.
Anywhere.
It was subtitled when I saw it.
It had to be subtitled. Yeah. And the only version that you can get to see are versions of it that were just taped off Spanish television years ago.
Oh, is that? Yeah.
Now, there's almost no other way to see the film. So.
But what about Sergio? He must have a print, because the one that we saw in Estepona was actually very good, and that's the first and only time I've seen it.
That was before all the trouble happened with the people, the producers and the backers. Sergio explained a good bit of it, and I can't remember the details, but essentially the people who own the rights to the film...
Right.
There was some kind of financial shenanigans involved, and something happened so that essentially the people who own the rights to it and could essentially make some money off of it by putting it out on DVD or something like that, either aren't willing to do it or want an astronomical sum from people who want to do it, and it's just too high. The money you would have to pay would cancel out any profits you could possibly make from it.
I mean, are they still around, the producer? Because I think Gomez, he died, I believe. His wife died.
Oh, is that what?
Yes, his wife died.
See, because there was something about...
His wife died.
There was something about a death right after production of the film or something
that
like that.
That would be Gomez.
And that was it, right?
That was okay. His wife. Juan Gomez's wife, I believe. She was very young.
Sergio talked about it. Now he's intimated a couple of times in the past few months. We stay in contact. And one thing he said is that there might be some movement on that film eventually. Something might happen. And it'd be great. The horrible thing is, he's not sure.
It's a good piece of work. I think
it is a good piece of work. It really is.
Is a very, from what I could see. Difficult again with the language, but from what I could see, it's actually a really nice little piece of work there. Nicely shot, and I think well acted, and
it was.
Location.
And that's one of the things about your performance in it that I really love. In that, I look at the films you made around that time, and it's pretty much true across the board for you and your performances. They do their best to make you look just as gorgeous as possible. I mean, you think about Faceless, and you're playing a model, so of course you've got to look gorgeous. We're going to, you know, the hair, makeup, everything's got to look, well, no, of course not. There's a reason for that.
Yeah.
And you even look at The Black Cat, the film you made immediately afterwards, and you think, oh no, she's an actress, and she's constantly made up, and she looks fantastic, and she even has wonderful makeup when she's in the bathtub.
Yes, as if you would.
As if you would. But in Howl the Devil, you're still, I'm not being wacky here. You're still a gorgeous woman, but you look like a realistically beautiful woman. A woman who's lived in this area for years and years and has dreams of perhaps trying to get out of it one way or another and has done some things that she's not particularly proud of, and this, that, or the other. You look like an everyday beautiful woman. And your performance really brought it out. It really felt like, because you watch you in Faceless and you're the model, you're the vivacious woman, and in this you're much smaller, and your energy seems so attuned to those wonderful scenes between you and Sergio where
felt very protective.
You can feel the maternal instinct coming
out
of you. It's really beautiful.
No, I did feel that towards him. And he didn't speak any English at the time, no English at all, but I felt such an empathy with him. He was lovely. He used to come round to Howard, and we stayed in this monastery place,
right.
And we had this wonderful pool, so he used to come round to the swimming pool at the weekends and spend time with us. So it was it was like my little brother or my child, you know, and he's just the most beautiful young man. He's the sweetest young man, and Paul would be so proud of him. And
he's such a nice guy.
I mean, she is lovely. She is just a wonderful lady. She's so lovely.
Every contact we've had with Sergio, he's been such a nice guy.
What you see is what you get. Just very straight.
Doesn't surprise me.
Loved his dad, and you know, and he's so proud when we were in Sitges last year. That was such an amazing thrill to be there and to show the man that made
the man
Frankenstein.
Who saw Frankenstein cry.
It was a beautiful piece of filmmaking. They did it superbly.
It sounds like we're going to hopefully get the chance to see that over here. I do too.
It's
I've been looking forward to that.
It's a wonderful piece of work. It's
That's great.
You've got a lot of actors and directors talking about Paul. You have his early life. you know, you can kind of understand the man where he comes from, and then you've got his struggles in his life, you know, the money and the everything. It's just a brilliant piece of filmmaking, very moving, and I was so proud to be just a little bit of that.
I knew you had participated, and then when we found out that you were there for the screening, we were just like, oh, that's wonderful.
No,
to know that these people are not just, I mean, that they're there to present it and be a part of it, even at that level, is just so nice.
No, it was so special. We had a lovely, warm audience watching it. I say we. He did. You know, the family did.
Oh, well, yeah.
So it was incredible. It was wonderful.
When you were making the film, what was he like as a director? How did he, I mean, because by that time you had a dozen or more directors.
Sorry, let me just put this in here. I was going to say, if you want to ask like one more for now, and then we're going to give the other couple a chance to do it.
Sure.
Then we can either come back maybe later tomorrow or something if there's more, if that's cool. Can we do that way? Then
yes,
that way, make sure everybody gets a chance to do it.
Sure.
So you ask, like, go ahead and ask like maybe one more.
Absolutely. Yes, no, I'm here tomorrow. I'm here.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll be here too. I'm glad to do whatever we can. But by then, you'd had a number of people work with you as a director. What was he like? I mean, I know there was he didn't speak much English, and you spoke enough Spanish. There was the language problem to a degree.
He knew what he wanted.
Straightforward.
He knew what he wanted, and you knew what he wanted, even with the language. But you knew he would understand from the actor's point of view what was required.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's the difference of a director that has been an actor, like a Clint Eastwood, like a...
Right.
There's quite a few of them now. I mean, Sean Penn, things gone into production.
And of course, these kind of people are going to understand the actors
totally.
To begin with. And it's going to be that much easier to communicate with him. And
yes.
that's what I wondered is, he'd spent so many years, he didn't mean to be an actor in the first place, but then once he became one, he threw himself
he
into
did,
it.
Absolutely.
And so he had to feel, you didn't start out to be an actress either.
No, I didn't.
So there had to be that knowledge between the two of you of some type of, I just wondered how he presented things, how he set scenes for you. Was it that much different from other directors, or was it just?
No, in fact, I found it actually very easy with Paul.
Really?
I think he made it because he came from that point of view. Plus, he was in a lot of the scenes with me.
Yeah.
So he went from... It must have been incredibly difficult for him. I don't know how they do it, because you have to be with the other actor and then hop behind and kind of look and see how it's going to work. Very difficult. He had to wear his two hats. So I think that's very difficult. He did it admirably. You know, I think I would love... The plan was that we were maybe going to work again together, and I longed for that. And I was really, really so upset when I heard of his passing.
We all were. That's kind of why we started this show.
He was too young, too young. He had so much more to do.
And he had plans. He had scripts. He had plays he wanted to produce.
Clever man. Very clever, very elegant, very, very true. Very, you just saw in his face what he said was absolutely true, and you knew him. I had great belief. I had great trust in him as a director. And I would love to work with him again. And I wished we'd found each other earlier. You know, as director, actor, that would have been great for me. But maybe next time around.
Maybe so.
Yes.
All right. We'll go ahead and let them
know.
And hopefully we get the chance tomorrow to speak a bit more.
Oops,
because we haven't even touched on the Black Cat, so that's going to be great.
Okay. Definitely. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Mail. Thank you very much.
Excellent. You really are.
Believe me, I've got a number more. Thank you. You're making this a lot easier than it would be.
Yes.
Thank you
so much.
Thank
we really
you,
appreciate
Mike
that.
Pleasure.
Hopefully we can do a little more, but we want to give everybody a chance here. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a good
one.
Okay, so that's the end of part one. That was on Saturday in the late afternoon, and we kind of got interrupted by, there are other people with demands on her time as well, and she wanted to go to dinner and things like that, but she was gracious enough and sweet enough to have us come back on Sunday afternoon and talk with her a little bit more again. At the time, the room was a little bit more crowded and a bit more boisterous, but was still able to get a few questions in and a few responses from her. And so here's part two. I think you have a jaundiced view of your career, and I think that probably that's probably healthy for you. But from our perspective, no, not at all. I mean, you shouldn't look at it that way in any way, shape, or form. It's amazing.
But it's not rocket science, and I'm not Mother. What I mean is, one does And if it's brought a bit of enjoyment, that's brilliant. It's good.
And the thing is, it's something that was described to me by my grandmother years ago. The idea, she was a nurse.
Yeah.
A nurse for 35 years.
Now that's very
years.
Worthy.
She never thought of it in those ways. She always described it as the stone dropped in the water and the ripples. Your good deed, or what you think of as just not even a good deed, just whatever you're doing day to day, you may think it has no influence on anyone, but it does. Because everything you do influences someone else. And she's just a nurse.
Whatever we do. Yeah.
She knows her influence. Yeah. She was a surgical nurse.
Yes.
She's aware.
Yes.
But you, with the huge exposure of a career of this type, you influenced hundreds of hundreds and hundreds more, and it was exponential. It's true.
Yes, I suppose, yes, the ripple effect. Yeah, and that's a nice way to put it.
You,
I like that.
You can never know all the positive effects you have. I mean, I think that's one reason why a lot of people get nervous to approach someone like you, because you have had a positive effect, and sometimes it's kind of, even if it's just minor, it's just that thing that over time, even small things add up.
They do. You're right. They do.
And
positive, aren't you? So that's not. I mean, one has to be positive. One does.
I was raised by very strong women, a lot of them, and they always try to put in my mind the idea that if you just do the best you can, you may not see the outcome of what you've done for years to come. And I was told this from a child, and I began to see it as I got older. They were right.
I love that. The best you can. I keep, it's interesting, so I keep saying to my daughter, she's got her exams actually starting tomorrow in England. Uh-huh. She's very scared. I mean, the other one did really well in her exams, very academic, and this one is very artistic and... But she wants to do okay, but she's very, very scared. And all I ever say to her is, you know, it doesn't matter. You just do the best you can. It doesn't matter.
Do the work and do it to the best of your ability.
Yeah, exactly. You know, what is there to be... I suppose she's afraid she's going to fail, not get the grades and things. But
that's natural.
But yes, of course. We all feel that. You're not going to learn the lines. You're not going to be... You're not going to get the audition. You're not going to, you know, do what you do. You do. But it is natural. It's difficult with a 16-year-old.
Well, those teenage years,
tricky.
Wanted to ask, you had talked about, while you were filming Howl the Devil, you and Howard Vernon stayed in a monastery.
We did.
And, I assume that means you spent a good deal of time with you.
We did. Well, in the evening. I mean, obviously, in the daytime, we were working. Working so flat out. But in the evening, we'd come back, we'd get ready for dinner and have a lovely... lovely dinner together. Go to bed very early because we've been up, you know, working since, I don't know, 6 o'clock. Paul was a hard taskmaster, but one and a really good one. So
I always figured that. How long were you guys there filming?
Was it about 3 or 4 weeks? Maybe even 4 weeks, 5 weeks? I can't remember, if I'm honest.
So one of the funnier things that we always talk about with Paul's movies is that, if you've not seen a lot of his movies, you wouldn't know this, but since he's writing the screenplays, there's one of the jokes we like to talk about is how one way or another he's going to end up in bed with every pretty woman.
I did. I was in bed with him
in
the film.
I was always curious.
I was.
Yeah. I mean, and what was great about your character is that you resisted and resisted because the character he's playing is a jerk. I mean, he really is mean-spirited.
He is mean, and mean to Sergio, these little one, yeah.
I was wondering, what was it like not doing the scene? I know the obvious physicality of it is what it is. You're filming something, but
yeah.
you're in bed with the director of the scene. Was he having to jump back out of the bed, get back in? Like, what was it like to just get it done?
I think it was very, very quick, actually, as far as I remember. He just had the camera there, maybe a couple of cameras, and it was over. It kind of. I don't think he did. I just think he trusted his cameraman. And because I ended up dead in the bed.
Yes.
So as far as I remember, but it was very quick, you know, maybe a couple of hours. rehearsing it, shooting it all over. So quite mechanical. You know, obviously very mechanical. You've got all the lights, you've got a small crew. So it was just part of it.
Well, you mentioned that you end up dead. At the end of the scene.
Yeah.
And in the film, it's Sergio's character that ends up killing
him. Yes.
Was Sergio actually there? Because the way it's presented in the film, he may not have actually been in the room. In other
words, he wasn't in the room.
Was it?
As far as I remember, it's a long time ago, I think he wasn't in that room when that was meant to have taken him, because you're not quite sure. As far as I remember, you weren't quite sure.
I wondered about that because there's a certain amount of protection that a father would have, not want to put his son in that position.
Absolutely.
And the way it's shot, it looks like, wow, I bet you that he shot the stuff with his son in the room later, after Caroline's gone.
Yes, no, I wasn't. Yeah, no, he was very sensitive to that, to anything, because he was young. Serge was young, so he didn't want to put him through anything unnecessarily graphic or not suitable. So he's very sensitive. He's very clever, he was just a lovely, gentle man. And yet he played these really strong, and even his physical, you know, was quite a strong one. But he was very gentle. And his wife is lovely, as I said yesterday. Delightful.
All the positive things that I heard about the entire experience from Sergio, he was constantly saying, "Well, remember, I was a kid."
He was a kid.
But so to him, looking back at it, it was this great summer out at this house.
I suppose so.
And,
I suppose it was. It's thinking back, yeah. I remember when we had to, Sergio and I, we did quite a lot running round together, just trying to protect him. There was a scene with the chainsaw. Yes.
Right.
I have seen some photographs of that, which looked quite...
You really have never seen the finished film, have you?
Except
for that one viewing
way back. The one viewing way back, yeah. So right. It's not that fresh in my memory.
Oh, well, no, it's very hard to come
good. By. I think it was quite good. But
it hangs together very well. It's a nice piece. It seems very the fact that he got to play all those different characters in the makeup.
Yes.
Did you get to see any of the makeup at the time, or was it just something after the fact?
I think that was after the fact.
Wow, that makes sense.
That was after the fact. Okay. So he put it in, because obviously he was always alone when he did those scenes. Mm-hmm. So that was after the fact. He obviously wanted to get all the actors out of the way.
Yeah, and then because that would be something that would take a bit of time.
It would take a long time.
And all those scenes are basically...
Same makeup person,
The scene, you bring up the scene where you're menaced by the fellow with the chainsaw, which is just one of those startling moments in the film.
Yeah.
This is really odd because this is it has a completely different tone from anything
else.
Yes,
it suddenly does, doesn't it?
And it's one of those moments where you're told by the cutting, okay, we're in a dream sequence.
Yes,
this is not
yes,
really occurring.
Yes. And the priest?
Yes.
The scenes with the priest, too. Yeah.
Well, that's one of the great things about that character that you play, because you're so conflicted. You played it. It was beautiful because it was one of those times when you really had a role that you could see, you know, she's had all this experience on screen, and you can kind of see it coming to a point where she's got a nuanced character to play here, and it was really nice. It was nice because you didn't look like the supermodel that you are. You looked like a real person.
Yeah.
And those scenes with the priest were really well played, and just they came off, and they had that feel of something authentic.
They felt real.
Yeah.
They so felt real when we did, because I liked him. We got on really well. I didn't know him that well. But we got on. We it was okay. I trusted him, and hopefully he did me. So it felt comfortable. I mean, it felt uncomfortable, but it felt uncomfortable enough to be real enough, if you know what I mean. That sounds very...
Well,
you know what I mean, don't you?
I know, because there's a certain... When you're playing that kind of scene, you've got to have that edge to it, because there's got to be that it's got to be there.
Yeah.
Another frustrating thing about this is, of course, it's another film where we don't have your voice.
No.
And I think also...
No, I don't know what happened to the tape or the voice there. I've got no idea, because obviously it's Spanish.
The only version that's available out there is the Spanish version.
It's the Spanish one. That's so sad. Because they did have the sound. You know, they have the people there. So it should work. But what about Howard? What happened to his voice? Was Howard's there or not?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I know he... Was he asked to speak in English?
Because
okay, if he's speaking his lines in English, then it's not there.
He was. Definitely, he spoke in English.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
No,
his English was good.
The reason I was asking about Luigi Cozzi was because of the black cat.
Mm.
And I think I'd asked you, don't you? Did you see a script before you guys shot that movie?
Yes.
You did?
I think I did, isn't that... I must have done, mustn't I? I don't do films without reading the script.
The reason I ask is,
but
how did
they added?
Well, see, that's that I expect. Having seen
pages,
the film,
they did pages. We got different pages, definitely. I did see a basic script.
How did he describe your character to you?
A rather jaded actress, rather pushy and manipulative.
You know, there's an on-screen prompt in the film itself that describes the character as, pardon me, bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So I wondered if that's maybe good. He just said you know the character's bitchy. She's very forceful and that's the thing is you don't come off as arrogant, but you come off as very well aware of what you've got.
Yes. She's manipulative.
Exactly.
Yeah. Does it come off that way?
It definitely comes off.
Oh, I'm
that
glad
way.
It does. Yeah. She's a user. I think not a very nice person.
Well, she ends up, as the film goes on, you discover that she's sleeping with her best
friend's husband. That's yeah. right. To get a part or something.
To get a movie role.
As far as I remember, I mean, as there you go. Yes, she's not a very nice lady, but very nice and different. You know, nice part.
You didn't often play kind of a villainous role, but
no.
That's definitely a villainous
no,
role.
No, that was nothing. Yeah, that made a change. I quite enjoyed it.
Out of curiosity, the bathtub scene, we were talking about all the makeup. You still
perfect
had the makeup. Perfect makeup.
Perfect
you looked
makeup.
Gorgeous. And no water in the hair, which I thought
no,
always fine.
No, the hair was perfectly
perfect.
Wasn't it?
Was that like a combination of wanting to do a shower scene, but not really... doing a shower scene, just like we'll do the bathtub scene? I mean, what was that?
So I was actually pregnant. I was pregnant. I didn't know I was, but I didn't feel well. I actually didn't know. Oh, goodness, I'm wanting to eat scrambled eggs and bacon all the time. And I wonder, but I was actually pregnant, and we didn't know. You know, I didn't know.
Wait a minute. When did you then find out you were pregnant? Well, after the film was made.
I had an inkling after the film.
Wow.
After
wow.
the film.
That's unexpected.
They showed me. I had to wear this rather tight skirt. And they said, "Would this be all right?" I said, "Oh,
yeah."
I said, "Is it stretchy?" So I had to wear this. And I don't normally. I don't. In especially, you know, I feel growing. I feel so much bigger than I did when I started. So. No, I didn't really. No, not till I got back to England.
Well, you were quite the fashion plate in that film. There were a lot of. Well, it was 80s clothing, so it was a little bit more flamboyant.
Very, very 80s.
Yeah. And then the hair was...
And everything, big hair.
Big hair. Oh, big hair.
Huge. Yeah, bigger. Even bigger. Mm.
But that seemed to be for photo shoots, so there seemed to be a little bit... It seemed like, okay, well, they're doing it bigger. It's a photo shoot.
Big hair, that's right. Yeah, big and bigger.
Did you work? Brett Halsey had a small role in the film.
He did.
Did you work with him at all? Did you get to meet him?
I got to meet him. I liked him a lot.
Is he
still around?
I don't think so. I'll be honest. I don't really know. I'd have to go and find out. But you have no scenes with him in the film,
no.
So I was curious whether or not you even met because his stuff could have been shot well after.
We did meet. Oh no, we did meet. I liked him. I mean, I didn't. I can't say no.
Yeah.
He seemed very polite and.
I didn't really watch him that much.
But I didn't have any scenes with him.
No. You've never seen the finished film, have you?
No.
I'll tell you what, I can burn you a rough and ready DVD of it if you want to see it. I'll bring it to you at Monster Bash. And just give it
would
to
I be able to see it in England, though, wonder?
I'm pretty, as a matter of fact, I'll make sure that you can. Yes.
Mm.
Last year we had
great.
Well, it's a strange. It's not a great print because we've only got that one source. But yeah, I'll bring you a copy of it.
I mean, what's it like? Is it terrible?
It's It's enjoyable. It's very strange. It's very disconnected. It has an odd structure to it. It's parts of it are very dreamlike. Parts of it work very effectively. Parts of it are flat out, honestly, terribly acted. Terribly acted, where it's just very clumsy. A lot of the dialogue seems to be
dated or
stilted, and also a lot of the dialogue at times feels like the two actors were delivering lines of dialogue from different scripts. It doesn't seem to fit. And what's weird is that a lot of the scenes that really have a focus seem to have a B, and a C kind of through line through the scenes are the scenes where there's you and other actors, and then you and when we find out about the betrayal where you've been sleeping with your best friend. Those scenes have a real force.
Yeah.
And then the scenes with Brett Halsey playing this wheelchair-bound mogul, they're very interesting, but the dialogue in other scenes just seems very odd and strange. It's a question as to whether that's the feel he was aiming for or not, or if it was just so bizarre that he was changing things.
I think it did change. It did change. You see, script changes have happened all the time.
Really? That doesn't surprise me, because hearing about, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Star Crash, hence the Blu-ray. But the way that from what we learn on here about the changes that were made while you were filming, a lot of different. I mean, that doesn't surprise me, because if that's the way he worked, then it doesn't surprise me that years later he'd still be doing that. Very, very interesting. And I will stop taking up your time here, since I'm going to see you in about a month anyway. But I would beg to get your autograph on this.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. I cannot thank you enough.
No, thank you. Thank you so much.
You're so sweet. I've met you before briefly, and you were really sweet then. And you make this easy. I was really nervous because, one of the first movies I ever owned myself was Golden Voyage of Sinbad.
Was it?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you weren't born then. Were you born then, or were you?
Yeah, I'm 43.
Oh, yeah. You look a baby. You're 43.
Yes, ma'am.
But you're still a baby.
That's what my mother says, but
mothers always do say that, don't they, with their babies?
I think they're required. I think that's almost a requirement.
I do, too. So. Yeah, I think so.
You know, honestly, there are few things more charming than being called a baby by Caroline Monroe. I'm a 43-year-old baby! But she was so sweet and so kind to give us so much of her time. I just can't thank her enough. And if you ever get the chance to meet her, shake her hand, get her autograph, do so. She is incredibly gracious and more than willing to talk to you, as you can tell from this interview, when I had a tendency to babble occasionally and she listened and responded with more kindness than she probably should have, coming from just some wild-eyed, freaky fan. So, remember, thank you for tuning in to this episode of the NashyCast, a very strange one, I must admit. But remember, you can get a hold of us at nashycast@gmail.com. Drop us a line. Tell us what you think. Go to our Facebook page. Like us on Facebook. Make us feel wanted. Make us feel loved. And we will talk to you again here in a few weeks with yet another episode. Thank you very much for tuning in, and we'll talk to you later.